Welcome to New Reality.
For this new session, let's talk about what makes a good life good. I hope it will help you to step out of the everyday world into Theta, where we live as spirits, free and independent of all earthly limitations. To achieve this best, I want you to relax and lie down. Sprawl on a sofa or lie on the bed if you can. Lie on your back with your arms spread out beside you. If you can't do that, then find a comfortable chair that will let you relax and drop your head. Ready? Close your eyes. Good. Now take a deep breath in and hold it for the count of three. Now breathe out slowly. Take a deep breath in and hold it for the count of three. And breathe out slowly. Feel your arms and legs are heavy. Your head is heavy. Your whole body feels heavy. Relaxed and heavy. You feel a little warm. Your breath is slow and relaxed. Your arms and legs are heavy. Feel yourself sinking into the bed or sofa. Now, go inside, deeper inside. I'm going to talk a while about courage, love, and integrity. It's a meditation about goodness. A few years ago, I had to attend a road traffic accident. It was a dark and dirty November night in the city. Two young women had been struck by a taxi and were lying unconscious on the pavement. Bystanders hung around, shocked, scared, uncertain what to do. The dismal rain made this a scene of horror and chill. It was unnerving. Kneeling on the road to help, I was soon drenched with cold rain and shivering until my teeth rattled. Warm, sticky blood soaked into my clothes as I worked on the most critical of the two victims, anxiously awaiting the ambulance. In the poor visibility and flashing headlights, my own safety was not assured, as unheeding traffic thundered past mere inches away. I was constantly splashed with icy cold rainwater. Somehow, a brush with death, not necessarily one's own, is a moment for considering the worth of what one is doing. Fate herself seemed to step out of the darkness and speak. It was a simple, clear message which only a fool could fail to grasp. How we waste our fragmentary and precious lives. True, I have seen people die many times on the hospital wards. But in a sense, that which we see on the wards is a different kind of death to the one which hovered close by in the dismal rain that night. Somehow, this was more immediate, challenging us as it did right there on the street, mixed up with our ordinary everyday lives. the finger of doom pointed accusatively at two young women. But it pointed at me too. For there is always that universal reproachful question importuning in all such moments. Am I doing the best I can with every moment of this fragile life, truly? Let us firm these suspicions of inadequacy into neatly phrased, if accusative, questions. Have we done the best we can with others, our family, friends, neighbors, and even strangers? Is there anything that should, at the last, be undone? Many of us would like to be remembered fondly for our best achievement, but what if we were remembered solely for our worst act in life? What impression would we leave behind on history? Are we up to date with our duties, or have we been shirking those things that we know we must do, putting them off for some other, more comfortable time that would suit ourselves and not necessarily those around us? Perhaps we can put it all into the one question, most awful of all. If we knew our last moments were at hand, is there anything we would wish to change? I know I thought about it again and again in the ensuing days. Suppose we were allowed to relive just one moment from life in the manner we would choose. Would it be right to elect the one that we enjoyed the most? Or should we choose the one in which we hurt someone else the most and be grateful for our chance to put it right? There is always one thing that haunts us more than any other. Nobody lives a perfect life, but we don't do too bad usually. And then there is this one event that could so easily negate all that we might have achieved. If only we could get rid of it, rewrite the past. For I aver that everyone has a profound, instinctive inner wisdom that allows us to know what should and shouldn't be part of our code of conduct. Ernest Hemingway put it quite bluntly: what is moral is what you feel good after, and what is immoral is what you feel bad after. That this personal imperative so often gets sidestepped or even overwritten and buried makes it no less real and valid. How much nearer to our own true nature would we be if only we listened to this voice and followed its counsel? And so, finally, I arrived at the real question for this meditation, which is, what are the components of a good life? I have chosen to invoke courage, love, and integrity. Could we not say that these are the components of the inestimable qualities of human goodness? Perhaps it may be possible to make all worthwhile human character attributes from these three key ingredients combined, mixed in various ways and proportions. Would we need anything more? If so, what? So much has been said about love that one might be cautious entering this arena. However, if there is nothing new to say, it's still worth saying this, that anything which can be said about love is not about love. This echoes the Zen Buddhist teaching that anything which can be said about Zen is worthless and almost emphatically not about Zen. The word ineffable is ascribed to something which simply cannot be put into words. It doesn't mean there is nothing out there. It does mean that it is so mysteriously not of this earthly place that ordinary language is inadequate. The words are not there. Treading carefully then, can we say that love is a universal principle of experience, more akin to the imaginary ether of the 19th century physicists, something that, if it wasn't there, damned well ought to be, a sort of underlying matrix that cannot be grasped, touched, felt, or manipulated. Love is more recognized by what it does and what it causes than what it actually is. The warm and intimate feeling, that need or desire, just the quickened heartbeat, these are all signs that love is nearby somewhere. But these manifestations are not love. The apple which falls is just an apple, not gravity. Yet we all know gravity is there. Many qualities stem from love without necessarily being love. We know that in love there is a sense of cherishment. That is the common definition. That in turn may have sexual overtones or not. There is also the intense care and yielding of compassion, which on occasion is smouldered down to tenderness, that gentler and sweeter principle we reserve for our nearest and dearest. These two loyal and earnest companions make all our lives the richer and more joyful. They are the harmony to the song of our souls. But there is something else too in love, something bold, great, and universal, something magnificent and awe-inspiring we know under another name, truth. I do not see how it is possible to separate these two great dimensions of living in any way. Are they not both the same thing? Our being is enshrined in what we are. Love is what our nature determines. Truth is the exactness of what we know and experience. In other words, what we are in being. Love flees when lies enter the door of our house of happiness. Consider the Chinese elements. There is a certain yin and yang here too. Truth has some of the fierceness of the masculine principle and the hard, unyielding strength. Love, on the other hand, is feminine, endlessly yielding and gentle. Remember, yin and yang are both aspects. They are not in any sense counter-creations or antagonists. An object without both would be merely one-dimensional, like a one-sided coin. Impossible. How absurd and paradoxical it would be to have gentleness and femininity without truth. How savage and cold to have truth without the temperance of love and softness. Where there is any quality lacking, there cannot be truth. Truth is whole. These impossible mutual exclusions and contradictions would cross over what philosopher Gilbert Ryle described as category violations. Here, then, is a clue to the intimate identity of these two precepts. One contains the other. One is the other. But we also need courage to live well. It seems to me that the choices with inherent evil or jeopardy for self and others are the paths which appear easy. These soft options are a short-term view, because in almost all situations there is a price to pay ultimately. But few people look very far ahead and foresee ultimate consequences. Otherwise, why commit evil at all? I'm talking about courage to do what is honorable for yourself alone. Courage is so like integrity because it means the nerve to stand up to what needs facing, not to quail in adversity. Courage is not about fearlessness. There may be great doubt and dread about going forward. Courage means that you do what you know you must do. If you can sum up the output end of courage, perhaps it would be that you remain true to yourself. Lies come from cowardice and fear, but lies also speak persuasively, if dissonantly, of self-dislike and doubt of self-worth. This is not being loyal or true to one's own being, for we are created rich in assurance and integrity. The spirit knows only light and radiant isness. Darkness, deceit, and evil come from elsewhere, though these two are creations of the spirit in attempts to solve the problems of retaining its pure path and getting to where it wants to be. If there is one easy distinction between the path of truth and the road of lies and dishonesty, it is that the latter is so easy. It is the root that eschews courage and denies its existence. This isn't to make the pathetic gripe that living life properly, the good life, is always hard. But it seems to me, philosophically speaking, that the whole evolution of evil and bad behavior centers around the fact that somehow an easier route manifests and we take it, turning aside from ourselves and our real destination. Thus we may know wrong. So let me conclude with how these particles interrelate. Integrity brings wisdom and guidance. You cannot have wisdom where lies and deceit prevail. Never. But truth is hard-faced and it must be tempered by love. Let us define our terms. Courage is an attitude of facing what needs to be borne without flinching. It is not fearless, but it operates despite fear of the consequences. Even more than that, the necessary grit and resolve to admit what must be said, to allow even the darkest corners of the mind to be exposed. You cannot separate honesty from courage. It is courage which gives integrity its fuel. They exist in a spiritual symbiosis. Love comes into this too. You must hate yourself to resort to lies and hiding. Reversely, those who love themselves honorably feel confident in their being and know no need to deceive. A person in this blessed state would no more lie than take poison. Only with courage and honesty can love prosper. Love is the warm, rich, powerful reward for good behavior, for knowing what you know is right, for allowing into your heart only that which should be found there. Integrity is a special degree or category of wisdom. I'm going to leave you now for a few moments to reflect on the thing that you would most like to change about your life. If you were given that one chance to do it over, what one thing would you change? And then ask yourself, how will it look when you've had the chance to put things right? Visualize it. Savor the deliciousness in your mind. Only you will know what's there before you. Well, my parable story had a happy ending, I'm pleased to say. Jacqueline and her friend Jill sustained fractured skulls. Jackie was unconscious for several days, but they both made a full recovery. Of course, it's impossible not to be reminded of the nursery rhyme. Jack fell down and broke his crown, and Jill came tumbling after. I thank them both for sharing those few tense moments in their sweet lives when disaster might have prevailed, but didn't. It helped me focus more clearly on the issues of right living and how to get more out of the precious lot which is ours all too briefly. The finger of doom had pointed directly at two young women. But it had pointed at me too, and everyone else there in the crowd of onlookers, standing mutely in the gloomy lamplight, unable to say anything which matched up to the somber drama.